south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, I was just looking at my health insurance policy. It's just coming up for renewal. It's one of those private insurance companies, of course, pays 80% of practically everything, including prescription drugs. But since I don't have the absolute top plan costs around $120 a month, and the plan I have is around $80 a month. Wow, what a gouge, huh? Difference is, in the deluxe plan I have versus the super deluxe plan, when I go to the doctor, a specialist, I have to pay $30 for a visit. And if I go to a GP, I pay $15. Now, if I had the top or super deluxe plan, $120 a month, I wouldn't have to pay anything for doctor's calls, and I'd have worldwide coverage. In this case, that's the difference between the top plan and the plan right below it. You see, most private insurance companies allow you to select between a number of plans. The very, very basic, kind of middle, a superior plan, a deluxe plan, or a gold, silver, or platinum plan. Lots of options. Now, personally, I don't give a damn about worldwide medical coverage. I just care about Latin American coverage. By the way, if I wanted to change that plan in midstream with the same company, I could do it. For example, if I did want international coverage, wanted to scale up, but I'd have to take a physical all over again because I'm over 50. That's a rule with lots of Latin American private insurance companies. If you're under 50, you no need for a physical at all. You just sign up for the policy and you're on. But once you hit 50, you got to take a physical. By the way, the plan I have is an age limit of 64. In other words, if you're 65, you can't get into the plan anymore. But once you're on, you're good till age 99. However, I know for a fact that with some bank-sponsored insurance plan, like, for example, the Banco Industrial Bank in Guatemala, they have a wide variety of plans, even a plan for geezers. They have a number of great insurance plan options, but you have to have an account in that bank to qualify. And to get an account there, you have to have applied for or have residency in the country. So forget about it if you're not a permanent resident. So far, anyway, as long as you're a resident and have a bank account there, you can sign up for their insurance plan or plans. Yeah, they have a number of them. And they won't ask for a physical. As mentioned, it's one of the few bank insurance plans that has an option for geezers. I don't mean if you're 100. I mean if you're over 60 or 65, you can still get in. That's fairly unusual. Most all insurance plans have an age limit. Some are 59, some 64, 65, depending on the company. Even some of the private/public plans, where private companies are in cahoots with the government, like in Colombia. Their companies won't let you get on the plan if you're over 65. Then you have to go purely public. You know, get on the decrepit national healthcare system. And don't let any of these idiots like International Living tell you different. There isn't a single Latin American national healthcare plan that gringos and expats can get on that you'll be happy with. They've all got tremendous limitations and drawbacks. There'll be times when you'll have to wait hours in lines, sometimes for days and weeks for routine appointments. Sure, there's always that happy coincidence of success stories here and there. There's always someone who will say, yeah, I had an emergency, or a friend had an emergency. We went to the hospital, they took care of us right away, in and out, perfect. And for some routine stuff like checkups, things go well. But believe me, I've heard so many horror stories when it comes to ICU and surgical treatments. For every good or satisfactory story, you hear two or three bad ones. The odds are not good. Do you want to take the chance? My advice, if you're working on that plan B, don't count on having cheap or almost free national health care insurance when you move to Panama or Ecuador or whatever. Sure, as a resident, you can get on those plans. But don't come down thinking that's going to take care of all your health care needs. You have to get enrolled in a private insurance plan if you can. It would be foolish to think that the national health care plan in your country of choice is all you'll need, though lots of expat rags will try to tell you that. You have to realize that every single national health care plan in Latin America, and every country has one, is dead broke and bankrupt. And when you hear or read on a blog an occasional story of a gringo or expat going into a national health care hospital or clinic and saying, hey, this is just like up in the first world. They've got all the right stuff, etc., etc. What they don't tell you is when things are up to snuff, that's usually right before election time and some politicians pumped all kind of money into the national healthcare system to get the vote of the unwashed masses who have very short memories at the voting booth. Then, predictably, like clockwork, after the election, the funds run dry. The doctors, nurses, and staff are months behind in getting paid. Maintenance lags. Things fall into disrepair. Morale sucks. The lines grow. There's a shortage of everything. And if you have an emergency or you really need to be treated for something serious, it can be a nightmare. Bottom line, don't fall for it when rags like International Living or AARP, expats abroad, you name it, pump up any given country's national healthcare system. Yep, expat rags are pretty good at hooking people by polishing that national healthcare turd. To me, it's a sad thing when people with major healthcare problems come on down, thinking that a national healthcare system in a particular Latin country is going to save them. Mostly, people who don't have a nest egg or whose nest egg has been depleted by high medical costs. I've met quite a few who've been enticed to come down, thinking all they got to do is get their residency and then they can get on that wonderful national healthcare system. Then they could live out their golden years safe and securely and all will be fine with the world. Well, that could and does happen if you don't have any complicated medical issues. But let's face it, most gringos and expats who do come down to live permanently are over 50. That's when healthcare issues start creeping up, and it's downhill from there. Now, of course, there are lots of first-world insurance companies like Cigna that offer worldwide insurance for Americans and first-world people, no matter where you live. That'll cost you a couple grand a year or more with a $5,000 or $10,000 deductible. Not a very economical option. Anyway, as for my own healthcare policy, it's coming up for renewal this week. And just for grins, I thought I'd reread the contract to familiarize myself with it a little bit more in case, you know, well, just in case. Now, I'd be willing to bet not one in 100 gringos or expats who has a private healthcare policy here in Latin America has bothered to read the contract because, hell, it's in Spanish. People rarely read their insurance contracts up in the States when they're in English. That's why so many people are unpleasantly surprised when they have to file a claim. So anyway, just yesterday, I was reading through my Latin American health insurance contract, the most recent update and addendum. I came across some interesting tidbits in the part where it says they provide coverage for funerals. Yep, contrary to first world healthcare policies, Latin American healthcare policies will pay for your funeral, up to a certain point anyway, what's reasonable and customary. And in the case of my policy, they cover about $2,000 for a funeral. Now, granted, up in the first world, that might not sound like much looking at funeral expenses from where you come from, up in the States. And I know it's not something people dwell on or want to think about at all till it happens. Hey, but it does and will happen, so you should know the facts ahead of time. Anyway, I just looked it up, and the average cost for funerals in the States in 2022 is between $6,000 and $7,000. And the average cost for a funeral in Latin America, between $1,000 and $2,000. Which is, coincidentally, pretty much in line with medical costs in general. Up in the States, medical costs in general, hospital, doctors, clinics, etc., about 4 to 6 times more than they are here in Latin America. But you knew that already, right? I know for a fact it's true you can get a complete funeral and burial here in Latin America for $1,000 to $2,000. That would be, of course, for a funeral in a regular middle-class cemetery. They've got high-class, gated, and well-groomed cemeteries and mausoleums here, too, with high buck, big monuments and marble statues and all that. But when you're dead, you're dead. Who cares? That's just your relatives showing off. It's not about you. As for me, I say cremate me and toss the ashes. Though if I do somehow get stuck with a gravestone, I wouldn't want it to be in the type of cemetery where drunks could wander in and piss on it. Anyway, like I said, here in Latin America, you could get a budget funeral for between $1,000 and $2,000. I know that for a fact because the big funeral homes try to sell you complete prepackaged deals before the event. In fact, many times I've been at a big shopping mall and they'll have a little booth set up and they'll hand out pamphlets with discount prepaid funeral packages. So anyway, if you have private healthcare insurance down here, it'll cover funeral services. And here's some of the details you ought to know. Here's what my policy includes. Services at the funeral parlor of your choice anywhere in the nation. The coffin. The funeral salon, all necessary transportation of the body within the country. They cover the cost for the required legal documentation, embalming, makeup and cosmetics for the showing, cremation if you so choose, flowers, the guest book, the religious service, announcements in the media and newspapers, the rental of the funeral cars and the procession to the cemetery, religious and or chapel service, and coffee, cake, and refreshments. Might that include the 3 T's? Tacos, tortillas, and tequila? After all, it's a celebration of a life well lived, right? Now, there's also a section here that says what kinds of funerals and death expenses they will not pay for. There is a list of exclusions. For example, people who have died when their insurance plan has been in effect less than 3 months. Sounds logical. And there's an exclusion for suicide, an exclusion for death by drugs or alcohol, and an exclusion for death caused by war or pandemic. You got that? Pandemic. Now, there's a can of worms for you. However, I've had cans of worms before. I've gone fishing, and I can't see what all the fuss is about. Sounds like worm shaming to me. Now, here's the thing that surprised me. When I got this renewal contract, it's got a brand new exclusion. We're talking about regular healthcare coverage now. It excludes payment for transport of a body, dead or alive, by air or by land, if the insured person weighs over 350 pounds. In other words, alive or dead, if you need to get transported, you got to pay for it yourself if you're over 350 pounds. Now, obviously, we know the sad facts that, up in the States anyway, two-thirds of adults are overweight and a third obese. And now, with the rise of fast food and junk food called chatarra down here in Latin America, sadly, Latin Americans are in the same boat and insurance companies are catching on. So, at first, if you thought when you first heard this, they were targeting gringos and expats coming down and getting on local private insurance policies. That is targeting us because, well, we've got that reputation of being overweight and obese. You'd be wrong. They're concerned with overweight and obese people in general. After all, they are providing health care insurance. It doesn't matter if you're on or off the Gringo Tourist Trail. Private insurance companies are starting to write weight exclusions into all their policies. Now, granted, you have to be a big boy to be 350 pounds. When I was a kid back in the States, I don't think I ever saw anyone that big except on TV or in the circus. But believe me, these days, all you got to do is take a walk in any big city or any shopping mall. You know what I mean. Just saying, insurance companies are catching on because they're in the business to make money, not lose it. I remember when I first came down to Latin America. First couple of years, I went raw. I didn't have any health insurance policy at all. I was young, stupid, and I thought I was invincible. You know the drill. But then, while in Costa Rica, my lawyer said, why don't you get on a plan? They're cheap and you can get on really easily. So I did. Back then, in the mid-90s, it cost me about $40 a month for full blue-chip coverage, and I think there was a $250 yearly deductible, and they paid 90% of everything. So I had that plan for a couple of years. Never had to use it, though. Not once. Though I remember when I was at the insurance office, and I asked about the physical, they said, what are you talking about? You don't need a physical. The broker told me, and I was shocked, that there were no other limitations except age. At 59, you can't get on the policy anymore, he said. That was pretty much their only rule. No weigh-in, no blood test, no urinalysis, not even a blood pressure check. Then again, that was 25 years ago or so when everyone was fit and skinny in Costa Rica. No one had a car. Everyone walked or took public transportation. And McDonald's was the only fast food chain in the whole country. Going to McDonald's was a special treat. Guys took their girlfriends there on dates. And families celebrated special events like birthday parties at McDonald's. Those were the days, man, if things changed. Oh, and back then, there was only one franchise pizza chain, Pizza Hut. All right, switching gears, let's talk about Puerto Rico as a Plan B destination. You know, I've got lots of first world listeners who've got Puerto Rican blood. They live in the States, yet they don't want to move back to their home country. So you have to ask the obvious question. Why are they living in New York, New Jersey, Chicago, Los Angeles, etc., and not in Puerto Rico? After all, they're considered Americans too. They're U.S. citizens. They've got U.S. passports. So why did they get the hell out of that version of Dodge? The fact is, lots of people of means, people from the States and Europe, are moving to Puerto Rico because of the fantastic tax benefits they passed into law about 10 years ago or so. And of course, you've probably heard those tax benefits have drawn lots of U.S. and European Bitcoiners and cryptocurrency people, almost exclusively to the San Juan area, which is now pricier than Manhattan. So you might ask, how is Puerto Rico faring right now after 10 years of those fantastic tax breaks, which, by the way, they're phasing out now for newcomers, as we predicted a while back on the show. After all, they're a U.S. territory and thus joined to the U.S. at the hip. That's why I think it's a big mistake if you came down to Puerto Rico just because you're a big-time crypto holder. You should be worried because the U.S. Congress, the Fed, and the U.S. banks hate crypto. It messes up their big brother plans, though they know they can't kill it because it's decentralized and international, but they'll do their best to tax and regulate the hell out of it, especially when the users are operating on U.S. soil, and Puerto Rico is U.S. soil. Anyway, a gringo living in Puerto Rico just sent me this little narrative. It'll give you a good idea of what's happening down there right now for gringos and expats living there. I'll paraphrase this and cut out the boring parts if I can. He says, the power went out this morning across the city where I live in Puerto Rico. Again. My wife and I have a running joke, and I'm not sure it's much of a joke. Every time the power goes out, one of us asks each other, I wonder which mouse farted this time, because it seems that it's all it takes to knock out the power grid in Puerto Rico. There are power cutouts practically every day. He says there are lots of things to like about Puerto Rico. Culturally, Puerto Ricans are extremely welcoming and family-oriented. They're also tough. They take no bullshit from anyone, and there's not a shy bone in their body. They're survivors, too. I honestly believe, he says, there's a warmth and friendliness in Puerto Rico that I've never experienced anywhere in the world, except possibly Brazil. Then he says, now I could go on and talk about plenty of other wonderful things I like about Puerto Rico, but my goal is to give you a balanced view and a good sense of the downsides, too. We've been living here several years now, and trust me, there's plenty of downsides. The electrical grid barely scratches the surface of the problems. The rest of the country's infrastructure is in terrible shape, too. The roads are full of potholes, for example, and there's no political will to fix them at all, thanks to the comically inefficient and bad government. He says there are so many openly corrupt politicians here, and I'm not talking about the subtle kind of corruption like the U.S. Federal Reserve officials who trade the stock market while they manipulate interest rates. I'm not even talking about blatant corruption like how Nancy Pelosi has conveniently become one of the world's greatest stock pickers by trading on inside information. The fact is, there are so many corrupt politicians here, they don't even bother to hide it. Everyone knows they're taking bribes, dipping into the public funds, and rerouting resources for political gain, enriching their friends and families, etc. It's just expected. That's what politicians do. And that behavior is directly responsible for all of the island's never-ending economic depressions. The actual unemployment rate here hovers around 7-8%, but in addition, 16% of the entire civilian labor force works for the government. So if you add those two numbers together, the unemployment numbers and the number of people working in the government here, that means that 25% of all eligible working adults don't do dick. They're just parasites on the system. By comparison, he says, in the state of Texas, just 1% of the civilian labor force works for the state government. All right, me, Johnny, here again. By the way, that's misleading. He says that 1% in Texas work for the state government. He left out the fact that about 6% of working Texans work for the federal government in some way, with another 4% or more working for government contractors. But still, even 10% of workers sucking off the government trough is way too much. Though it's a lot better than 25%, like in Puerto Rico. Anyway, he goes on to say, it's nuts in Puerto Rico. The government, which is totally ineffective, is the number one employer in Puerto Rico. So, to that effect, in their efforts to give people something to do, they managed to create a mind-numbing bureaucracy that makes everything complicated and more expensive. Then he says another bizarre feature of living in Puerto Rico is what they call the Jones Act, an old federal maritime law from the 1920s. The Jones Act requires any ship transporting goods to Puerto Rico to be U.S. flagged. So in other words, if there's a product being imported from, let's say, Europe, first it has to go to the U.S. mainland, be offloaded there, then put onto another boat, which is U.S. flagged, which adds several days to the journey of any products that are bound for Puerto Rico and additional expense, which is especially irritating when it comes to fresh food. And Puerto Rico imports a lot. It's a small island. It has little manufacturing. So anything like TV, household appliances, electronics have to be imported. He said a lot of food is imported too, and any perishables like meats, fruits, vegetables, etc. are already well past their optimum freshness by the time they arrive to the grocery store shelves here. So most food is of lower quality simply because of that rotten federal law. Then he says, the final point I'd like to make about Puerto Rico is that you have to pay through the nose for all of this, especially now. On top of that, real estate prices have gone through the roof over the past 2 years. And if you're living in some hot market like Austin or Miami thinking, yep, same here, buddy, you ain't seen nothing yet. Puerto Rican property prices, especially in the neighborhoods popular with expats and Bitcoiners and crypto people, have quintupled over the past year. And those hefty price hikes have been jacking up the general housing market too for the locals. The secondary effect is that locals who have property have become greedy. In fact, some people with falling down checks in the middle of nowhere act like they're sitting on the Taj Mahal and want $3 million bucks for a piece of junk. It's ridiculous. So the benefits of living in this place, including the tax incentives, are out of this world, but the cost of living here and the infrastructure problems are spectacularly problematic too. Bottom line, if you've been thinking about moving to Puerto Rico to take advantage of the tax incentives, it still might be worth it to you if you've got a nice nest egg or a continuous source of income, but definitely consider the costs and the downsides. By the way, remember the hurricane that whipped through here 5 years ago? There are still parts of the island that have not had permanent electricity restored. That was 5 years ago, and still, permanent power has not been restored. All right. Thanks for that. Good to know. As for me, just another case of a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there or have a plan B there. But who am I to say? If you love beaches, don't mind Uncle Sam breathing down your throat, and you have a huge bankroll and go solar and get off the grid, Puerto Rico could be your plan B destination. But as for me and most average gringos and expats who are working on a plan B, it sounds like another version of Dodge, a place you want to get the hell out of. All right, we're on to something else. Remember, a couple of shows ago, we were talking about a living fence that many farmers and finca owners down here use. It's a plant that you shove in the ground about every half meter or so. Basically, a stick. And within a year, you've got a solid fence. Well, we have a couple of listeners who chimed in on that one, including good old Captain Mango. He says, Johnny, about those kind of cool Izote living fences you were talking about, I'm using them myself. He says, I've got a crew going all over the finca, the coffee plantation I'm working on. He says, I've got lots of them. They're about 1 meter long and they grow like weeds. We just stick them in the ground and don't have to lift a finger. And soon enough, we've got a solid fence. Then he sent me a photo of a big pile of these things. And the cost, you get about 15 of them for a buck. Then comes this email on the same subject from Art. He says, hey, Johnny, it's me, Art, from Maui. And here in Hawaii, we call those border plants, those live fences, willy-wills or panics. We trim ours once or twice a year, and I just put an ad on Craigslist for free cuttings. And I get lots of responders who come and scoop them up real quick. Good thing, because I drive a scooter everywhere. And by the way, I don't even care if gas gets to be $10 a gallon. I live in the Altiplano in Hawaii, where the hills reduce the miles per gallon to a mere 85 miles to the gallon, down from what you're supposed to get, 100 miles per gallon at sea level. By the way, he says, that was a perfect call with that email from Dr. No that you read about Guatemala. Here we don't call it mañana time, we call it Maui time. Must be contagious. The locals here have the same sickness. Then he says, aloha from Hawaii. Signed, Art. All right, now comes an email from Mr. K. Some observations from a newbie expat gringo who's been living in Guatemala for about 6 months now. He says, Johnny, you know that old cliche saying, if all you have is a hammer, everything's a nail? It's kind of like that with the locals who do work here in Guatemala. Here in Guatemala, you just change the word hammer in that phrase to crappy machete, and it would almost fit 100%. Thus, when the local workers come over to my place, and me, with first world efficiency in mind, I try to provide them with tools to do the job efficiently. That is, if I have them on hand. I usually do, because I'm pretty handy and I have a pretty good collection. But oftentimes, I have to scratch my head at how they do stuff. For example, they'll cut hedges with machetes instead of hedge shears, even though they're available. They'll cut the lawn with a tool you would usually use only to cut the edges or the corners of a lawn. The words efficiency and ergonomics do not seem to be part of the Latin lexicon. It's all right, though. They do get the job done. Then he says, on a personal note, as I wrote to you before, I think Antigua, Guatemala is very expensive. For example, for rent, we pay $1,000 US a month plus utilities for a very beautiful house in Jardines de Antigua. And every day we are meeting new and interesting people and get introduced to local networks. Of course, having a dog helps a lot. I think $1,000 a month is a little too much to spend, so I'm looking to get something around the $600 or $700 range. He says, Johnny, I could send you pictures of my very beautiful house if you like. Mr. K, I don't get it. You just said your house is very beautiful. Up in the States, you spend $1,000 to get a house, you get a mediocre dump. You know, a very nice and beautiful house in Chicago, LA, Toronto, Atlanta, St. Louis, anywhere in the States, or even in Europe, you'd pay well over $2,000, probably $3,000 a month. In fact, I was just talking to my brother the other day, who owns a couple of apartment buildings north of Chicago, in a sort of middle to lower middle class blue collar area. He says, a run-of-the-mill, even kind of scruffy, two-bedroom apartment there. No yard or garden at all will cost anywhere from $1,500 to $2,000 a month. Meanwhile, Mr. K, you're describing a very beautiful house in Jardines de Antigua for $1,000 a month. We're talking about a whole house here, too, not just a two-bedroom apartment. Now, admittedly, the city of Antigua is as touristy as it gets in Guatemala, though it's tree-hugger, low-key tourism. Not nearly on the scale of tourism as in Costa Rica, Cancun, and certain other parts of Mexico. Which just proves the point, the more gringos in the area, the more English spoken, the higher the prices for everything. The farther you are off the gringo tourist trail, the lower the rents. Then again, the farther off the trail, the fewer and fewer English speakers you'll find. That's the trade-off. Then Mr. K mentions a bit about the laid-back attitude of the locals. He said, Johnny, speaking of walking, I walk around a lot. And one of the things I noticed right away is the speed, or let's say, lack of speed the locals have when they walk. They seem to be in no hurry to get anywhere. He says, I'm a pretty fast walker, whether I'm going someplace myself or with my dog. And it always comes to pass. It happens all the time. I get stuck behind a local who just moves like a snail. Sometimes it makes me crazy. All right, Mr. K, thanks for that. You hit a nerve. I'm a fast walker, too. Some of my exercise routines involve power walking. And that means I'm passing dozens and dozens of people all the time. And even when I'm just at my regular stride, walking down the sidewalk or in a mall, I'm forever weaving between people. I'm so used to it, I hadn't given it a thought until you brought it up in your email. Though sometimes I wonder what the locals are thinking when I whip past them like that. Do they think I'm nuts? Though, come to think of it, after all these years, I've never had a Latino or Latina buddy keep up with my stride. I've always had to slow down. I can't remember a single time a local ever overtook me. Not that I walk excessively fast, maybe a little faster than normal compared to most gringos, but not a lot. Funny thing, though, everyone in my immediate family walks at about the same speed. Kind of fast, like we're on a mission to get somewhere. Though, down here in Latin America, I do notice myself always getting ahead of whoever I'm walking with. However fast or slow we walk, we just can't help it. It's built into our stride. Maybe it's built into us because of the quicker pace of life up in the first world. Though, if the local Latinos think it's rude when you end up a couple of paces ahead of them, they'll never let on, they'll never say, because they're too nice, too non-confrontational for that. Now, you can try to slow down to their speed. They're not going to speed up for you. But just like trying to use your left hand if you're a righty, it just doesn't feel natural. Oh well, such are the problems in paradise.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.